Yeah, maybe we can start a little bit with origins on, and I don't know, a bit of your biography. Where are you from? What are your influences? Do you come rather from a conservative way of life? Or, yeah. And now the development from that, from your origins to this artist life and even political life. Maybe you can tell me something about that.
Okay.
Because I couldn't read anything about that in your blog.
I was born in Virginia, which is a pretty conservative area of the country, but actually both of my parents were professors and really, very open-minded.
At university?
Yeah, my father was a
So you must be very intelligent.
Well, I hope so. I hope so.
Welches Fach? What?
My father was a mathematician, and my mother was or is in. My father died, so that's why I speak in the past. My mom is in early childhood special education, so she worked with teachers who were working with young kids who had learning disabilities or had special needs in school. They were both teachers. They were very open-minded. They happened to be in Virginia. I don't know that they would have necessarily chosen that, but their jobs led them there. So it was a pretty conservative area of the country, but
Catholic or Protestant?
my family or the area?
Area.
I mean, it really varied. It was all over. I wouldn't say it was heavily Catholic. No, it was probably more Protestant. But it was pretty varied. But it was also very religious too. I would say, like, there was a lot of Christian practicing families, but different denominations of Christianity. There were also a lot of Jewish families. Because we lived so close to Washington, D.C., it was a mix of, military families that worked for the government, teachers, obviously, and people that worked on Capitol Hill. So it varied from really conservative to quite liberal. It was really mixed up. But I would say overall it was more conservative than the area that I moved to later to go to school, which was the Bay Area in California. So my family was quite liberal, but I still felt like when I moved to California, I kind of realized the extent to which that was conservative in my schooling and my upbringing. Because there was just a lot of, for me, I felt like there was a lot of internalized homophobia and sexism, especially in just the way that people were thinking, just in people's mentality that probably they weren't even quite aware of. And then when I moved to a place like the Bay Area, I got a more radical perspective from people. People were more open to talk about sex and gender and sexual
In
orientation and all those
California.
things. Yeah. So I would say, as liberal as I grew up, it wasn't nearly as liberal as I understood it to be for kids that grew up when I went in California where I went to school. That's my own feeling. But really, my family's been quite supportive. I mean, on the one hand, I'd say I'm pretty radical as far as my politics, like when I, especially in like my sex positive activism and education and stuff like that, and making queer porn.
When did that start and why? Did you have some key moments for that?
That started like 9 years ago. And yeah, I
How
mean,
old are you now?
I'm
33?
34.
Okay.
Yeah. So it happened after I moved to Berlin. So I kind of knew I wanted to go in that direction, but like happened right away that I
But
was
you have
interested.
been interested in such topics as queerness or feminism before?
Yeah,
So when you
definitely.
have been teenager, I don't know.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, again, like my mom was a feminist activist when she was in college, but she was of a different generation of feminists, so she came from, I wouldn't even want to say anti-porn feminist, but in that direction.
Second wave.
Yeah. So that's like, I would say that's where she and I have a bit of a parting of ways, where we understand our feminism a little bit differently. But still saying that, she's quite supportive of what I've done. I mean, she's seen the stuff that I've done, at least. She you know, she hasn't disowned me or anything. So
I think she's a bit more conservative as a feminist, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, but she's not, like, she's quite tolerant, really, considering, I think, what I've kind of confronted her with. So we've been able to have dialogue about it, and yeah, she's been really supportive. And the rest of my family has been quite supportive also of, like, of my lifestyle and my choices and my art. So I'm lucky that way, really, because I know that some kids, like, really have to completely break out of their family in order to do what they want to do. And it hasn't been that way for me. I've really been trying to also be really open with my family more and more, because especially lately, my personal life has really been more and more queer. I have a really kind of extended family now. I have a rainbow family. I don't know even how to describe it anymore. A really polyamorous family. And I've been trying to talk to my family at home about it. And it's been difficult because it's hard for me to find the language to talk about it. But they really have been listening, like, and they've been really supportive and communicating with me. So it's been nice to have that.
So you have several partners from both or more genders and sexes?
Yeah, I've been partnered with my husband for 9 years. And we've always had a polyamorous relationship or an open relationship. But now I'm also partnered with my girlfriend, who's a trans woman, and he's partnered with someone and having a child with another woman. And I also have a non-romantic partnership with a woman who is about to have a baby in May, so we're going to be co-parenting together. So I have a couple different kind of partnerships in my life that are key partnerships, and there's two babies coming into the mix too. So it's been really interesting to share that with everybody. Actually, it's been, I'm trying to understand it for myself, but it's really nice to have, like, at least I can talk about it with my family more or less. It's not easy. I wouldn't say that it's easy thing, because it's kind of complicated to understand it, but I at least don't have to be in silence about it. So,
yeah. But it should not be the problem of your parents, how you live. So it's more a problem for you and your environment and your partners. How does it go together in a practical way?
Yeah. Well, I think it's both. I mean, there's of course the part that's about me and my partners, but then I have come to understand that it can be problematic for my family because, you know, when someone asks my mom, like, about me, you know, in her heteronormative kind of world, she can say, I have a daughter, she's married, she has a kid, and da da da, and have a grandchild and all this. But when you have a queer relationship, then you have, she starts to not really have the right kind of language. And we're trying to figure out and develop a language so that, you know, the child that I'm expecting with my co-parent is also understood as part of our family, and my child and my mom's grandchild. But it's hard for her to understand that when the child isn't from me directly and biologically, I mean. So I can understand that it's just hard, because also, you know, maybe her friends or other people in her life don't have queer lifestyles or don't even know anybody that does have a queer lifestyle. So it's difficult sometimes to wrap her own mind around it, and then to have the language and to be able to speak about it with pride or, you know, with joy about it. So, yeah, this is really a process. I'm really right in the middle of it right now, just trying to figure that out. So,
okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk later a bit more about identity,
yeah,
sex, and that stuff.
Yeah.
How did you get in touch with this Bonaparte crew? Where you work partly now?
I got in touch with them because I was freelancing as a dancer and a performer, and I had done a performance in Switzerland, and I think somebody saw the performance there, and at the same time, Tobias, who's from Switzerland, had said that he was looking for some dancers to work with when he moved to Berlin, or even maybe this was prior to him moving to Berlin. He had a gig in Berlin and needed some dancers. Excuse me. And this person, I think, recommended me. And so actually Tobias called me up out of the blue, said, "Hi, I'm Tobias. Da-da-da. I have a project called..."
When was it again?
This must have been in 2007.
Okay.
Knew Bonaparte already at that time?
No, I didn't know the band at all. Yeah, he called me and said, "Hey, you know, I'm coming. I have this gig. It's for the Quentin Tarantino after party."
Mm. I don't know, since when are they popular or have a bit more public?
I think the turning point was around 2008, 2009.
Okay.
Where things really started to pick up. They won a radio award and got... suddenly there was something that happened, you know? Like, we all felt it. We had done several tours. Molly actually was doing one of the first big tours where they just hit all of the clubs, you know, around Germany, just went hard. That's the other female dancer.
Mm-hmm.
She had done that first tour after this initial gig that she and I did together, where I first met Tobias. Then she did that first tour. And then she and I started alternating back and forth because he couldn't take always both dancers. So, because there was also a male dancer, Lulu, that was on board. So we would alternate, and that's how we did the next several tours like that. And then something kind of happened around maybe late 2008, early 2009, if I'm remembering correctly. I could be a little bit off, but... and then we were able to both go because finally we were playing a little larger venues and we had larger stages and we could take more dancers. And then... over time, it started being a bit more fixed about who was the crew, and we started having like more fixed relationships on stage with each other as well. So then it became Molly and I and Lulu and Rafi, who's Tobias's brother. So those were the four like performing artists on stage generally. Yeah. So it's been a long time. And actually, Molly, she came on that very, very first gig because she and I were already working together prior to that point. So Molly is like somebody I just trust with my heart and soul on stage. And she and I have such a nice dynamic together because we've been working so much and like we communicate so well non-verbally and we have a good sense of space with each other. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice. And she's a great friend, so...
Mm-hmm. What was your most exciting gig in the past? So does it depend from the crowd? How many people are there, or what is the special thing?
Oh gosh, that's hard to say. I mean, of course, it's like it was really exciting, especially when we started playing for larger crowds. Just that rush.
What does that mean, larger crowds? How many?
Like
1,000.
Yeah, 1,000, 1,500, or some of the big festivals where we started to headline, and there was just a sea of people out there. It was like, wow, you know, whoa, people know the lyrics, and people are really screaming. That was fun, but. No, I mean, I don't think that necessarily defines it. Of course, we always love playing Berlin because our friends and our peers are there and people really support us, and that's always nice. That gives me a special feeling and, you know, feeling of pride to be able to come back to home, which I consider Berlin home. But also sometimes just the crowds that are really interactive with me and, you know, with us on stage that... just give us a lot of energy. I mean, it doesn't have to be a large crowd. It could be 20 people, but sometimes they're just really in it. And
how do you come in contact with people?
I go into the crowd sometimes. I crowd surf. Sometimes we, you know, just Molly will pass out sweets or bananas or, you know, funny things to the crowd. Or Rafi goes and wanders in the crowd a lot. Yeah, or just eye contact or like, wrapping gaffer tape around somebody, you know, there's a lot of different ways. Sometimes it is just about eye contact and, you know, like touching or about to touch somebody and they reach out to you and it's nice. It's a nice feeling. So, and that can happen in just like a little punk club, which I love as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because then there's less barrier between the crowd and the stage too. So that's gives you more chance.
Your performance and interaction between each other, is it completely planned or is there a lot of improvisation?
Well, it's both. Like, in the beginning, there was a lot of improvisation. Like, in the first several years, it was almost always just improvised every time. And there, while there's still, like, I never have to do anything. Like, I can always do absolutely whatever I want, you know, that still remains. So if for some reason that costume suddenly doesn't work, I can't get it on, or I can't do this or that, the world's not going to end, the performance won't stop, I can throw on something else, I could come out naked, I could come out in a towel, like anything.
It's always fun. A surprise for the rest.
Yeah,
of the band.
I mean, there's still, yeah, exactly.
What's
and I do like,
now?
I do like to surprise them if I can. But I mean, to be honest, even though that possibility exists, at this point we have a lot of plans as far as what happens, because I mean, partly it's just like when you're doing a tour, like let's say with 25 shows, it's so much planning, and it's the show is too long to say have a completely random order of things, in part because, you know, like sometimes I like to play with a layer or the development of character. So if I have a layer of costume, I know that I need to put this one on before this one, before this one. And, you know, sometimes I think this costume would look better in the end of the show rather than the beginning. So, I mean, you start to make plans and you start to also realize what other people are doing on stage. And so it becomes more of a show where there's certain characters that go with different songs. And also we start to create our own little choreographies within the songs because they work. And because, you know, they feel right and we get a good reaction from the crowd. So, I mean, I would really have to say that over time our show is going to look similar from show to show.
What are the special Matt Cade songs? Are there some?
Your favorite?
Yeah, let's see. Well, we were just talking about how tonight we might play this song called Body is My Battlefield. And I used to dance. We used to do that song in the last tour. We haven't done it in this tour. And we decided that maybe tonight we'd play it. But
you should.
It's his favorite.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it.
Dein Lieblingslied. My body is a battlefield.
Yeah. Hopefully we're going to do that tonight. So, but we used to play it in the last tour. And I would always dance on that one. I love it. I also dance on this song called Ego, which is quite slow, and it's just, I mean, in a similar way of body, of that, like, there's this slow suspense to it that I really love, and then this breakthrough. And I play with a new costume in Ego this year. Actually, this year I decided that I was going to go with all new costumes, so I made a rule that I couldn't use my old ones. I ended up breaking that rule in two songs, but basically I got rid of all my old costumes and started fresh, so I had completely new characters for this tour.
Do you design them yourself, your costumes?
I work with my partner, with my husband, so he's done several of my costumes, I've done several of my costumes, and there's been a couple that we basically collaborated on. So he did the one that I use in Ego, which is this gold, like, warrior, very angular looking costume. He designed it himself, and he just said, look, I want you to use this for Bonaparte, here you go. I had nothing to do with the design of it, but I absolutely love it. And then there was another costume that I designed myself, which was like, it's full of leis, Hawaiian leis, so it looks like flowers all over the place. That's a new costume that I made with paper mache and stuff. I'm more of a crafty person. Like, I'm more the person that'll have a glue and hammer and nails and stuff like that. Whereas Juan, my partner, is a tailor, so he can really sew and make patterns and stuff like that. I don't make patterns or sew with the machine.
Now let's switch a bit to other topics, for example, feminism, society, political stuff. You spoke about your mother and her way of feminism and fight. What feminism would you say you represent? Is there some, could you define that, or is it, I don't know, just a vague utopia you try to live?
I mean, I guess I would define myself as a sex positive feminist. So I really...
So you would not say porno, as for example the German feminism in the 70s?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, remember? In the 80s, I guess it was in the 80s.
How is it termed? Porno feminist?
Poor and then no. So we are against pornography in any way.
Ah,
so
I actually didn't
realize. Sex negative
feminism, maybe.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Yeah, no.
They said penetration can't go with feminism, though it's a contradiction.
Right, right. Like the Andrea Dworkin.
So no dicks.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I definitely wouldn't define myself that way. I don't really think that it, I don't think that that way of thinking is so valuable anymore. I think that, so many of us are thinking about our bodies in multi-gendered kinds of ways that I feel like to just stigmatize the phallus feels very old-fashioned and doesn't make sense. And I think it also doesn't necessarily correlate with something that's anti-feminist. So I don't think all men are anti-feminist, for example, or need be. Or
you don't think so?
No, I don't think so. And it wouldn't make sense anyway to assume that, because then we wouldn't have men as our allies. I think more and more that we are thinking in multi-gendered terms, as trans persons are so visible and part of our queer communities, and we are speaking of ourselves as multi-gendered communities, I don't think we can even really speak anymore in these binaries of male and female, so, or penis or not penis. It just, we really have to find our allies wherever we can and like unite as
but
much as
But this
possible.
Sounds like a kind of utopia. There's no gender anymore. I don't know if it's realistic to talk like that about our society. And then if this would be real, so we don't have this category anymore, sex or gender, so we are just people.
Mm-hmm.
Would the term feminism would still make sense? Or would it make sense to talk about feminism, because feminism is defined via women and femininity? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, first of all, I don't think that I envision a place without any gender. I think of it as multi-gendered. So I think actually it's not that it doesn't exist, it's just that it exists in a multiplicity. So,
and more than two.
Yeah. So that we can self-define ourselves in however way we'd like to, speaking of our gender, and we should be able to speak broadly about it and in whatever terms. So, you know, I have a body with a cock and a pussy, or I have a body with a pussy but I only like to fuck with a dildo. I mean, there's so many different, and I'm attracted to people with pussies, or I'm attracted to people with many different kinds of gender and genitalia. I mean, there's so many different ways to describe how we see ourselves, and also how we see ourselves in sex, and how we see ourselves attracted to other people, that it's already like multiple ways of envisioning this. So I don't think of this as a nullification of it at all, like, or that we shouldn't talk about it. I think we should, and we should be able to speak specifically, because there's sort of one or the other. Either we think of ourselves as one blob of humanity and we have no ego whatsoever, or we really think of ourselves as all completely unique individuals and are able to get to know each other on those levels, like how specifically different we are. I mean, at least that's how my thinking has been lately. You know, we either forget all that and we unite as one, or we are able to speak very specifically with each other and understand each other as specific beings. So, or somehow we maintain a balance of both, you know. As far as it relates to feminism, I think that we're not at a place yet where feminism isn't needed anymore, because if we do think of ourselves as united and in our humanity, I mean, yes, it's utopian, but I also think like utopian can exist in the mind, and by having an existing utopia in the mind, we can enact some kind of real change in our actual, in our physical space, in our world, in our community. And right now, there are plenty of places where feminist struggles are still relevant, including all over the Western world, you know, whatever we'd like to think. I mean, there's still fundamental inequalities. There's still struggles for, you know, women in the United States, for example, as one example, that need to have leave for pregnancy and the months after their childbirth and are struggling to get that from their employers, or, gosh, are struggling to be able to have abortions or to get access to birth control. I mean, there's so many things that are relevant to being female, being able to have children, bear children, and all this. So, or the way that birth control is different for men and women at this point, you know, or for the way our different bodies work. So, however we want to term it, there's still struggles that I would say are feminist struggles, and they're different. I mean, then you have other places where women struggle just to have the right to get a divorce or to drive a car or this kind of thing. So I think feminism has to be really contextualized. You know, it's really relevant to the place that you are. And I think that what's important is that we support each other in whatever feminist struggle is important in that way and in that place and in that context, because it's different everywhere. You know, like for one person, maybe the struggle is becoming much more queer and is really not about just being a woman anymore. It's really about more of a queer, multi-gendered kind of liberation story or access and visibility. But in another place, it's something much more seemingly binary. It's about women having the right to a divorce or getting an abortion or this kind of thing. So, like I say, I think the contexts are different, but that doesn't mean that we can't unite and be, you know, have solidarity and support each other in that.
Yeah.
So, but I think we're far from living in a utopia yet, for sure.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous thing. So if you just go for this utopia and queer stuff, then maybe you forget the situation right now in the world, where we have to talk about men and women still.
Sure.
And fight for women, especially women.
Sure.
With vaginas, people with vaginas. So.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
However they define themselves. So people, sure. Difference between male and female, that's a fact.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yeah, that's true.